Okay.
Okay, so Sue, share a little bit about yourself and some of the influences that have shaped who you are today.
Okay. And if I'm taking this in a different direction than you intended, let me know. My family is first generation Canadian. My family arrived from the US prior to my birth. I was born in Eastern Ontario and grew up in Northern Ontario, with a brother and a sister. My father was a teacher and director of the business department at the high school. And my mom worked as a volunteer and focused on our family. My parents both had strong influence on my lifelong learning approach. My dad was someone who would teach himself how to do things if he needed to. And my mom was very handy fixing things, having grown up with my grandfather who was a mechanic. So my family spent a lot of time in the outdoors in all seasons. And that was really the reason they wanted to move to Canada. We also had dogs in our lives, and this influenced my love of animals, especially golden retrievers. And my dad introduced our family to computers after we moved to the States when he worked on his master's degree, when I was in high school, and that really ignited my interest in computers and information systems. My student summer jobs influenced my health information management background, through work at a medical clinic, with 11 physicians with varying specialties. And every year they moved me around to learn different roles, over multiple summers. So that really contributed to where I am, today in the early days. Is that what you're looking for?
That's perfect. That's perfect. So I'm going to ask a question. Where are you now? Are you still in Eastern Ontario or are you in the US?
I'm in Southern Ontario, just
Okay.
west of Toronto. Sorry,
Okay. No,
should tell
that's
you
okay.
that. And I'm nowhere near where I was at one point in time. It's okay.
And just as another follow-up question, your family, you said moved from the US. What part of the US?
Western Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. Just nice background. Thank you so much for answering that. So then, it sounds like you've had some exposure, to health information, but what was the pivotal moment or the people that guided you towards, the career in health information and informatics?
Yeah, so I did my undergraduate degree at Western University in London, Ontario. It was the University of Western Ontario at that time. And I was able to take courses in information systems, which I had a strong interest in, and clinical decision support. And those sparked my interest in health information management. So I did further research and found out about the diploma program in Toronto, and then did the CHIM certification at a future date. It wasn't called that at the time, but it now is. And anyhow, then I started my career officially at the Ontario Veterinary College in the Veterinary Teaching Hospital, and that was really the further electronic health record learning that I had, and that came with exposure to both large and small animals as part of that in a teaching hospital, which I found very fascinating and really enjoyed being there. After that, I moved more into acute and long-term care type hospital settings. And that gave me more exposure to health information management, more in the classical health information management in hospitals. But also greater use of hospital information systems just based on where the organizations were at with that work. Over the years, I had opportunity to grow my knowledge and experience in the hospitals. Some of my experience included more exposure to health informatics than just health information. And because of that relationship, working closely with the IT department, eventually I ended up doing the CPHIMS CA certification through Digital Health Canada and HIMSS out of the US. And one of my roles a number of years ago now involved digital health standards and privacy And that role set me on a deeper dive into digital health standards. I gained further understanding of many standards that are available and how they were being used to support data exchange and data representation. And as my experience increased, I had the opportunity to work in government organizations involved in e-health and further electronic health records at the provincial level.
That's fascinating. So the difference between, I was going to say, digital health and what we would, I guess, call just general health information, what's the delineation? And what is also that spark for digital health in and of itself?
I think, so it goes back to the early days of having exposure to computers when I was younger, and having been exposed to computers in a way that I could see the value and the benefit to how they would work and how information could be used and flow. And I think I've always had an interest in that data technology side of things, and so have continued to keep an eye on what's happening in a lot of that space. I'm one of those people that, even though I've been around for a long time, I would rather do things electronically. I loathe paper. It drives me nuts. I've got paper around me, but it really aggravates me, I'll just say. My preference is, if I can do it electronically, I would rather do it electronically. And I just feel so much has progressed in the financial world and in other areas with technology that needs to happen with healthcare in similar ways and continue to evolve. I laugh a little bit because way back in university, I did write a paper on artificial intelligence because that was many years ago and people were talking about it back then. And I joke about how disappointed I am about where it's at today, only because it hasn't progressed as quickly and as, I'll say, as intelligently as I expected it would be by now. And it's been a long time, so I do have hope before I retire that something will happen in a way that I will be impressed with AI. But I look forward to seeing that further, I'll say.
I would love to unpack that a little bit because from your perspective, because right now there's AI is a big hot topic, right? And everybody is on this bandwagon of it's progressed so quickly over the last, COVID hit in 2020, right? So 2019, right. 2020. So over the last 4 to 5 years, like, oh my God, AI, and like, what are we doing? And to hear you say it hasn't progressed as quickly or as intelligently as you thought it would have, can you unpack that and maybe give us a little more insight into what you mean?
I think back in the early days, probably close to, well, I started my career about 38 years ago, this past summer. So that gives you a sense. And it was prior to that that I wrote the paper, cause I did it when I was in my undergraduate degree at Western. So that was a few years before that. As part of that work, there was a lot of talk about the neural networks and being able to use computers to think the way humans do, right? And really far-fetched ways of using and having them take over the world, that kind of thing. So a lot of thinking about what that could look like in terms of jobs that would be replaced, different ways of doing things that people hadn't really talked about up until that point in time. And I think just if I look at what was going on at that time in technology, it was pretty rudimentary, like just not a lot of connectedness to anything, standalone, a lot of solutions, punch cards, all kinds of craziness that doesn't exist in the same way today. And I think just the thinking at the time was that it would go so much faster in just a few years from that time. So within 10 years of that time, people were thinking that so much more could be achieved. And I don't think it did, because we're now talking about it now as if it's progressed so much in a very short period of time, like you've said. So I just think the hopes were much higher 40 years ago almost to where we're at now. I'm not saying we haven't made any progress, because the machines are much more powerful. The potential is much greater. I just think it's a little bit ironic when we look back to what was there when we were starting to write some of those papers. And there was work done prior to when I wrote my paper and worked on that area. But a lot probably could have happened by now that didn't. And now you've got people in this big hype cycle around what's really happening with AI. And I think it can be dangerous if people don't understand it, especially when you're dealing with some of the code systems and terminology standards. So I'm a little bit concerned that people might misinterpret how they should be using it in ways that might be not in the best interest in certain. It's no different than when people were looking at it with diagnostic imaging and having it diagnose certain images, right? You could potentially use it to identify lung cancer in patients, right? If you train it, get it to look at it, recognize it. But some things don't show up on images in the same way. So there's the potential. So the same thing exists with anything you do with technology. If you don't take into consideration the risks that come with that data or how it can be applied, you run the risk of making a mistake or using the information incorrectly. So anyway, I hope that helps. I don't know.
No, it does actually. So thank you for unpacking that. I think you're right. There, AI is definitely a buzzword, or it's definitely, there's a lot of, lack of a word, a lot of hubbub around it, in many different spaces, right? And and so I just thought that was interesting in terms of the progression of it, right? And it was almost like the COVID was the catalyst for a lot of digital transformation, with positive and negative. But AI sort of got caught in the middle of that, and so people I think attribute it to this big explosion that is happening now.
Yeah, I think people have been trying to figure out ways to take the burden off of the healthcare professions, and I get that.
Yeah.
And I think some people see that as the way to make it happen. And I mean, you look at things on TV and they're looking at screens that are like clear glass and stuff's displayed and stuff looks so much better on TV than the real experience in real life, right? And that's the part that I think we lose. What's that reality like? What does it really take to do it? And there are people that have made technology better and make it be able to do all of those fancy things. I don't think everything that you see on TV is reality at this point in time. And that's the frustrating part, but we do need to find ways to get the tools, and they won't evolve without healthcare professional insights, but we need to have the tools advance much more sophisticated than they are today. It's the same as your iPhone, right? Your iPhone does much more because somebody decided to inform it and tell it how to do what you wanted it to do and evolve it over time. If people that are working in healthcare as healthcare professionals don't have time to inform it, it's going to be stuck with what some person that isn't a healthcare professional thinks it ought to do. And sometimes that scares me, that we're not getting, like, I want people that are in the healthcare professions to work in healthcare professions because we need them. But there needs to be a way to somehow speed up that evolution of some of the tools that are out there. I just don't think everything has evolved quite at the speed it could and needs to. That's all.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Your career spans multiple sectors, so acute care, community, veterinary health, like you mentioned. How has these transitions influenced your professional growth?
I think I've had the desire to continue to grow my knowledge and expand how I can help make the healthcare system and the healthcare system experience better. And that's been very valuable in guiding me in identifying where I can learn about specific topics of interest and collaborate with others with similar interests. Many, many people, because of the length of my career, have contributed to my learning opportunities over the years, including formal education, participating in group presentations and panels, volunteering to do things with articles, professional practice briefs, book chapters. All of those things have been informative experiences and transferable to other work that I do in my day-to-day roles. I've been very fortunate to have people that have supported my interest in learning and sharing information with others, and that's given me the opportunity to participate, share information, and help others learn in the process. But it's also been learning for me too. Like I love to learn. Like I would spend hours learning if I weren't working full time. I will just tell you that. But that's just what I've learned to do over the years, and it feels good to learn. So not everybody feels that way, I know, and not everybody likes change either. So I think I feel fortunate that that's how it makes me feel and that I enjoy it. I like to share information with others, and I do, like if I come across an article and it's talking about something that I know a colleague of mine may have an interest in, I'll email it to them or I'll send it to my boss. And I'm not sending it to get brownie points or any of that kind of thing. That's not why I do it. I do it because I think it might be helpful. And early on in my career, I had an experience with somebody that was a sales rep that I was working with. And I can't even remember the company now, and that's bad, but it was a long time ago. But it was early on in my career, and the person came in and they took the time to bring me a folder full of interesting articles that were related to health information. And it was helpful for me to learn. And I just felt that experience, that interaction, the fact that I felt like I didn't just get a sales visit from somebody, I also got something meaningful that I could learn from. I felt that was good and helpful. So I think that's where I carry it from. I don't know.
I love that. I love that sentiment. I'm just going to diverge a little bit. What would you say, like, based on that, like, education sounds like it's a huge component of who you are. You know, if I had to ask you, if you were a thought leader, like, what would your passion project or that spark in the area that you work in, what would that be?
I am very passionate about the terminology standards. I think terminologies like SNOMED CT make me feel like there's an opportunity for representation of that data in a better way throughout the electronic health record, whether it's a provincial electronic health record or whether it's a point of service electronic health record, EMR. EPR, whatever you want to call it. I think my passion for that terminology is because I've had an interest and have followed it for many years, have written, a primer for CHEMA in the past about it, have participated in presentations about it. My role at one point in time was as a lead for the terminology standards, prior to being in the director role. And so I spent a fair amount of time learning those standards, not just learning about standards overall. And learning those standards made me passionate about how they can actually help. the data be more meaningful and computer readable, which I think is the other part of, as we talk about some of that AI side, computers are not going to be able to figure this out on their own. They do need humans to help them. And I think a good part of it is having good sound terminologies. I will say the other thing is we used an earlier version of the veterinary version of SNOMED in my early days at the veterinary teaching hospital. So I was also exposed to it there. And I think that also impressed upon me how we were using it there in real life as part of how we coded our data and sent it in as part of the data that was used for the veterinary teaching experience with the students and with the teachers at the veterinary teaching hospital, but also in connection with other veterinary organizations across North America, because they always connected with the North American health teaching hospitals in the veterinary world.
So you're speaking to somebody who doesn't work in health information. So I'm going to ask you to unpack what. No, that's okay. It's good because then it helps me understand and it helps me to speak to the nuances of the role. What do you mean by terminology? Like I have a thought in my head, but I want to make sure that I'm correct. And then SNOMED, what is that?
Okay. So in terms of terminology, if you think about there's content in an electronic health record or in any health record, some of that information lends itself to being codified in a way that you can have a code and a description that easily allows the code to be a computer number, for instance, or numbers that can represent a particular concept. If you think about a health condition or a diagnosis being represented in somebody's health record and using a code system with numbers that makes it easy for the computer to recognize it, that's essentially what a terminology is about. It's using those concepts that represent language in a health record in a way that the computer can read it.
And so, for example,
ask your question and then I'll.
It's not a question, more of a comment. So, for example, let's just say a broken leg would be coded as, and this is, I don't know, but I'm just throwing it out there. So, 113 is a broken leg. So, that's basically what you're talking about, the terminology that's sort of attached to what me as a nurse or me as a lay person would know as a broken leg is this code 113 that gets fed into the computer. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, and it can be used in different ways to represent it. So it could be that automatically as you enter certain descriptions in a drop down, it might have a code in the back end so that it's filling it out. Or it could be that you're entering a code automatically. Like, it really depends how you set up the system as to how it functions. If you think about SNOMED as it's called Systemized Nomenclature of Medicine, Clinical Terms, and it essentially is, are you familiar with the ICD codes that are used? Yeah. So little more granular than ICD, not intended to be used for mortality or morbidity coding, which is what ICD is about. It's really intended to represent any clinical language within the health record can be represented using SNOMED.
Fascinating. Thank you. Thanks for unpacking that for me, helping me understand it a little bit better. Based on all of this, what qualities do you feel that you've developed that has helped you be successful in your role?
Did we skip the one about how I've evolved personally.
Yes, I did. Yep, I can ask that. And you want to go back? So how have you evolved personally over the years as you've taken on more leadership roles, such as your current role in digital health standards? So maybe they feed into each other.
Sure. Yeah. So my leadership opportunities have given me added learning that has opened my awareness, listening skills, and problem solving as a leader. I'm getting better at asking questions and not giving all the answers. I'd say often what I try to do is help people by giving them the answers as opposed to learning how to ask better questions to help people learn and take on more accountability instead of me trying to do everything and not delegate or worry about other people trying to get things done. So that I think is increasing that awareness of what I can do to be a better leader and supporter of others succeeding as they grow. I'm also more patient, I think, with myself as well as with others as they're on their career journey as well. And I like to be able to share information and help others learn and be able to see that outcome of the learning. Whereas before, I might not have been as patient to wait for that to happen. I more want to jump in and help kind of thing. And I think I'm learning not to do that quite as often. I think the other thing I would say is, and we talked a little bit about this already, but my passion for health information and digital health standards has supported me in being able to make the necessary decisions and informed my confidence in ways that have been important to my continuing evolution as a leader and as somebody that has a subject matter expertise that is important for me to be able to draw on, to be able to do the work I do and to support the people around me. So it's really that overall confidence that comes from spending the time in the field and also understanding how some of those pieces come together to support more of that overarching use of standards and health information, et cetera.
Perfect. Thank you. So you sort of mentioned how you're now a lot more patient. And it's about asking better questions. So that feeds into my next question about being a mentor. How do you approach guiding others, not just professionally, but in terms of their own personal growth?
So a lot of what I've done is shared experiences with people, shared articles, shared reports, presentations, other materials that can be sort of that jumping off point to have a learning discussion or an assignment that can help. Like if somebody's come to us as a student and they're working on something, we give them things that are real projects, that are real work we need done, not something that is a theoretical approach to doing the work. So sometimes that approach ends up in further deeper dive into exploring questions or explaining processes. And I like to help people understand how we do things and explain why we're doing what we're doing and give them the opportunity to help us learn too, because sometimes when we get students, it's also students that know things that we don't know because they're in school now and have exposure to up-to-date things that we might not necessarily know about that they do. I think the other is doing more of that collaborative problem solving and throwing ideas out to be able to, and I do that with my team too, not just with students that are there. The other thing that I've done is suggest volunteer activities. Over the years, that's been helpful for me to be able to learn and grow my experience and to also, there's a lot of hidden skills in writing articles and building presentations and presenting that you end up using in day-to-day work that you don't think about. I'm pretty good at proofreading now because of the number of articles I've written and had to read and that sort of thing. So that always helps. I think in terms of the, what do I hope mentees take away from their time beyond the technical knowledge, I think it goes back to that comment that I made about sharing the report or articles that the sales rep had shared with me. I hope they take away that they can learn just about anything they want to learn, and that you can usually find an article or a report that's value and informative to share with others. I think I always see items that are interesting and informative and like to share them, like I said, and try to do that. I think it just, I think I find if I've learned something from something, sharing it with somebody else, I feel like they might learn something. And I'm not doing it because I don't think they know something or anything like that. It's really just more, hey, I learned this and it's interesting. Maybe somebody else might want to know that too, that kind of thing.
Well, and I think when you share something, there's this enriching quality in it, as opposed to, you know, being that subject matter expert and telling somebody something, but it also shows that you have that willingness to learn and that willingness to collaborate and to share and to pass things on. And I think at the end of the day, it also shows that you have that human side, right? You may not know everything. And right. So, you know, I'm reading this article because I may not know, or like you said, I found that interesting.
Yeah.
Very endearing. I love that. So your educational background is very diverse and it spans so many different areas, social sciences, health information, your commitment to lifelong learning, like you mentioned, how has your commitment to lifelong learning influenced your personal and professional growth?
I think with this one, I didn't finish it, but I will give it a stab and you can tell me what you think. I think my commitment to lifelong learning has kind of come naturally. It's something like I grew up around a teacher and multiple teachers, like teachers and nurses and doctors in my family. So, it really is a mix of those backgrounds and, having been around people that have always liked to learn, and because my parents lived in Canada without my grandparents were in the States still. So there was stuff they learned to do when we were kids and you just took for granted that learning is how you do things and an expectation that you will learn to do things. I think that has opened me up to making sure that I continue to learn. And I'm a knitter. I've learned to knit. And my grandparents taught me how to knit. And I've learned how to do things for work over the years. My parents passed away when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. So when you lose your parents and don't have them, you become very, I think you become very independent of needing to do things on your own and having to continue to learn, because you don't have any choice. There's no safety net. And, at the time both my parents passed away, I hadn't been married at that point. My brother and my sister and their families, but, was on my own to the point where I needed to make sure I could do what I needed to do to stay employed and keep learning and all of that. So I think it was I always felt that my parents raised me to go to school and learn and do things and felt that I needed to keep that capability there and continue to do so. So I think it influenced it more from making sure that I could survive, because when you are on your own and don't know if you, like, you're doing a job, you think you're doing okay, you never know. But at any point in time, things can change in the market or the field that you're in or any of that sort of thing. So I just always wanted to make sure that I continued to learn. If I had to stay late to learn something or had to take extra courses to learn something or do something. And the other thing was doing the volunteer work. Like when you volunteer, and I did some of that for credit because you need CPEs, yes. But also some of it was fun and interesting, and you met people, and it was always good to be able to advance your learning and be able to give something back to the profession, which was, I think, helpful in being able to continue to grow as a person and to be able to stay knowledgeable in the field.
This is not a question here, but again, going off of something that you just said, you said that you volunteered. What was your, I don't want to say most favorite, but the volunteer role that sort of really meshed with who you are?
I think I would say participating in writing of some of the book chapters. There's two book chapters I participated in writing, I think two, maybe three. I think doing that work because I was taking knowledge that I had in some cases, and turning that into information that other people could use. So that felt really like you had synthesized it into explaining it in a way that others could understand it. And I think I enjoyed that the most of the things. Not that I didn't enjoy some of the others, but I found that particularly interesting to do.
Did it challenge you? Or did you find it challenging at the same time?
It was challenging at times, and especially because you were taking one of the book chapters I wrote was one related to some work that we had done at Ontario Health, and it was complex work, and it had to be written, and I was working, there were three of us writing this parts of this chapter, and because you were dealing with different writing styles too, and trying to make it so that it was understandable by anybody. I think one of the editors in one of the comments that came back, write it so that your grandmother can understand it. And it was like, okay, yeah, I get it. Got to make that easier for somebody to understand that isn't living in the technical world that I live in on a daily basis. So, yeah.
And what was the book, or like, what was I'm guessing it was like a textbook, right?
It was a textbook that had information in it about standards.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. As you look towards the future, what personal or professional goals are you most passionate about pursuing? And how do these goals align with your broader life journey?
I think the one thing I want to make a difference to is how health information is available to the healthcare system. And part of that is the standards work to influence that. But really want to make sure that for myself and for others, as we continue to age, that information isn't as siloed and as inaccessible as it is today in some places. We all know and we all say data needs to be in the right place at the right time and all that good stuff. But it's not just about right place, right time. It's not having it be excessive effort for it to be there and having it be seamless in how it interacts with the patients and healthcare providers in an intuitive way. And I think I just want to make sure that if in any way I can influence how decisions are made in healthcare, that it is supported with standards so that it doesn't continue to be as challenging as it is today. And I don't have a magic wand. I don't have all the ways that this can get fixed. And I'm not saying that it's broken completely. I think there's a lot of effort that has gone in and a lot of good progress to date. But I really do believe that there's more that can be done to make solutions more intuitive and more seamless in how they interact with people and with the healthcare profession so that things happen more in tune with how they need to happen to support patients and their families and all of that. And I think that's both personally and professionally, because I had experience many years ago with the healthcare system with my parents. And I'll just say at the time, there were some things that I could see that could have gone differently. And there were some things that if the solutions were better, that would have been a better experience for all of us. And I think I'd just like to be able to see that happen going forward. We've come so far. We shouldn't stop now. I'll just say it that way.
I agree with you. I'm originally from Toronto, so from Ontario, and I haven't obviously lived or worked in Ontario for a long time. A couple of years ago now, maybe a little bit more than a couple of years ago, Alberta implemented Connect Care, or Epic, I think it's called Epic, right, in Ontario. And I love the accessibility as an end user to know, like, I've gone for blood work, I can look up my blood, like, I can access my own blood work. I may not know what the values, I mean, as a nurse I do, but as a lay person, you may not know what all the numbers are, but at least you have that accessible at your fingertips. And the same thing of, you know, when you go for an x-ray or so, now on the back end, there's a lot more information that we don't have access to, but right. I do love the fact that I have access to it. And the premise is that because I have access to it here in Calgary, if I go to Banff, you know, and something happens, my physician or the physicians out there in the emergency room could have access to the same information. And I think I'd love to see a system, and I don't know how this happens, across Canada where it's all connected. So if my dad is visiting from Ontario and something happens to him here, they can look up his whole history from Ontario, right? Yeah. And I think that that's what I would love to see. And as you're talking, I get that same sense.
Yeah, that's really what needs to happen, that level of connectedness across all of the country and beyond even. Like, there should be information that it should be easy for you to have key information with you regardless of where you go. And it shouldn't be about just putting it in the health section on your iPhone.
I agree. Okay, so last question. When you reflect, So when you reflect on your life and your career, what legacy do you hope to leave behind? And how do you personally hope to be remembered by the lives that you've touched? So students, mentors, colleagues.
I think I'd like to be remembered for making a meaningful contribution to how digital health standards and health information are able to support patients, healthcare professionals, and the healthcare system. I have a special interest in the terminology standards, like I've mentioned, such as SNOMED CT, and would like to see greater use of those terminology standards to represent clinical data in electronic health information and analytical systems as well, to improve how data is used and interpreted for clinical decisions and patient outcomes. And I think I'd just like to have people have a strong appreciation for the use of standards. I think people think they understand what it means to use standards and how to use them. And I don't just mean professional practice standards. I fully support those two, but really the world I'm living in is more around the data and the data standards that support how that data gets represented and exchanged. Would like to hope that people have a better understanding and awareness of that in the near term and not too long term.
And so when you say a better understanding and a better appreciation, what exactly are you hoping for in that realm?
I think greater use of some of the standards in ways that people haven't necessarily wanted to. I think now there's, with all the AI hype, there's a lot of expectation that we'll just leapfrog over the use of standards and just have these systems that are smarter, more intelligent, just do everything they need to do with data without a need for use of standards or standardization or harmonization. And I think there's a lot of data that's duplicated. There's a lot of data that is collected in different sectors using different meaning behind certain ways that data is represented. Allergies is not allergies across every healthcare system and setting. And it really should be simple in a way that we don't try to have a different allergy set in primary care to specialty care to acute care to long-term care to home and community. You get my drift, right? So, and allergies is a really simple example, and I use it because it is simple and many people can relate to people having allergies. I don't mean to in any way simplify or degrade anything about an allergy being something simple. It can be very complex, but I think what I'm getting at is we really need to make it easier for, regardless of the setting, regardless of the purpose, making sure that the data is understood, represented as it should be and intended to be, and easy for people to use in electronic and human systems, both. Sorry. I probably have high expectations on this. I've been doing this for too
long. Not at all. I can definitely hear your passion in both the digital health realm and in the standards realm, and it's fascinating for me. I don't have any more questions. There's those two that you will think on, and hopefully, if you can, no rush whatsoever. Forward to me, and if you don't, you've given me tons of amazing content to write something for based on you. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate your time. I know that
we did skip one question that I do have. You had question 5 with the personal qualities.
Yeah.
Had to develop to succeed in those roles? I'll give you that one.
Sure.
I've put down things like perseverance, patience, tenacity, listening to others and myself, learning, mentoring, colleagues, and collaboration. And I think those are all the things that I use on a regular basis because of how I need to operate in the role that I'm in, as well as things that have helped me along the way in staying engaged in what I'm doing and continuing to make sure I stay current. So hope that helps.
It does. And I love that because I think, and you mentioned tenacity, and I think that that's a huge asset and a huge factor, because I think sometimes when you, how should I put this? When you've been in a career for such a long time, there's a comfort, and a lot of people don't necessarily, you get that old, well, this is the way we've always done it, right? And I definitely see that that's not the case with you. There's this evolution and this need to push forward and this need to, you know, to make things newer and better and with the appreciation of having the end user at the end. So I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. I think the one thing that I have enjoyed about the opportunities that I've had is the fact that there has been continual learning, and that learning isn't just because I can learn, it's I want to learn, and that's what keeps me engaged and wanting to keep doing more. And I will tell you that probably there are some people that have worked with me, especially some that work with me now, that wish that I didn't have that ongoing desire to fix things or change things or find a better way to do it, because sometimes it will drive people crazy because they think, uh-oh, here she goes. She's found something else that we need to fix. And we never have enough time or enough people to do everything that I can identify. So it's not always a good thing, but I do find it exciting, and it keeps my mind active and engaged and doing things. So, and hopefully making a difference.
Well, I was going to say, I think that passion, you know, even if it at some point gets exhaustive, because people do go through change fatigue, but I think it does instill in others that same sort of tenacity and drive in themselves, right? So much appreciated. Thank you so much for your time and sitting down with me and letting me interview you. I appreciate it so much. I'm thinking that the article probably won't be written probably for another couple of weeks.
Sure.
So you'll probably get it beginning of September-ish, I would think.
Okay, no problem. And I'll try and get these other two off to you in the next week and a half. Is that okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Take your time.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your summer.
Thank you. You too. And great to meet you, and really appreciate
you
your help with this article. And I look forward to seeing the draft.
Yeah, and hopefully I can do you justice on paper.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
Thank you, Sue.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.